Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes, Caught Offside. What is wrong with you? From the Upper West Side of Manhattan, Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh.
What is your problem?
I'm laughing so hard, I'm crying.
Do we need to restart?
No, I just insulted you off air because I'm in attack mode today because of the Caught Offside Cup triumph. And I came into the studio and I've just gone straight for the throat. I insulted you. You're wearing a shirt like old Gil would wear, a used car salesman that slept in his office.
I honestly don't. Well, why? Because it's wrinkled? It's a little wrinkly. But the shirt itself, like, I don't even understand. I know that I own some shirts that when I put them on in the morning, I'm like, ugh, I got to get this shirt out of my rotation because I hate it. This isn't one of them. This is a totally normal shirt.
If I was,
what are you wearing right now that you have any leg to stand on? What is that? I don't even know what that is. What are those shapes?
If I was...
Short sleeve button down, you look like Dwight Schrute.
Okay. If I was casting for Stressed Man on the Edge in a film, that is the shirt I'd want him to wear.
Honestly, there are some shirts that if you want to make fun of that I own, I can totally take it and I get it. I'm stunned right now.
You're like a Wall Street broker who's at the end of his tether.
It's because my face, I've never had so much hair on from the neck up. This is my beard is never longer than this. I desperately need a haircut. Like, I look like the kid from Jumanji.
You look a little bit frazzled.
Yeah, but the shirt has nothing to do with it. I just need a haircut and a shave.
Oh, I just started laughing and I couldn't stop. It's unprofessional. I'm sorry.
It really was. What a show, though. We're going to fight back. We've started in the negatives with all of you, but we're going to fight our way back now. We do have a Caught Offside Cup to look over and analyze. I will do so begrudgingly, but I will do so, and I will tip my cap to you as you take this year's part one of the trophy. Other games, of course, to talk about, Chelsea and Cardiff, City, Fulham, we'll get to all of them. A little bit of interesting news here in the U.S. with David Moyes wanting to be taken seriously as a candidate for the U.S., which is interesting.
Yeah, I've got things to say about that.
Big what to watch for, because the Champions League begins. And red cards, man of the match, mailbag. We will do the best that we possibly can to keep this under an hour.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, it is.
Especially with that shirt.
I honestly don't get it. I don't get it. Let's get right into it right now.
And you're upset.
Yeah, you're upset now. Yeah, I was because of my shirt or because of the Tottenham-Liverpool game?
Well, the shirt and the game.
Yeah, mainly the game. The shirt, you're just wrong. Like, I can't be offended, really, by something that's just so baseless and makes such little sense. So I just take it. I move on. Although I did recently try to get I need a new suit. It's just time. And so I went to get measured for one. And you know how all these years I've joked about my weird body syndrome? And so I've always joked about it. And I was trying the suit on, and the guy, the tailor, was like, you know, there's this one spot where it's just like lumpy, a patch in the suit jacket. And I was like, is there no way to get rid of that? You can't tailor that somehow. And he confirmed my WBS. He said,
said to you, you're lumpy.
No, he said, look at your two shoulders. I said, okay. He said, your one shoulder is higher up than the other. It's pulling that side of the jacket up. He said, we're never going to be able to get rid of the lump in the jacket there because your shoulder's pulling it upward. So it's true. We've joked about it for years, and I've suffered in silence, but it's all true. You ready now to talk about the Caught Offside Cup?
There's so much material here. How can we even talk about football?
Well, we're going to try.
Taylor said you were lumpy, and that one shoulder was higher than the other.
My weird body syndrome. There's hundreds of us out there. I am the face of it.
Oh, my God. Okay.
All right.
I got to get myself together here.
Liverpool 2, Tottenham 1. Look, I don't even really know what to say other than Liverpool were clearly the better team. And it's interesting because I'm kind of between two minds on it. One half of my mind is telling me on another day Liverpool win that game 5-1. But the other part of my mind is telling me on another day that ends 2-2. Because Son was clearly fouled in the box at the end of that game, and it should have been a penalty.
Go with the first part of your mind. The first part of your mind is the fair part of your mind. It's the part of your mind that recognizes that Liverpool should have been out of sight and that a 2-2 draw would have been an absolute travesty and would have papered over the cracks of what was an abject performance
from
the Tottenham Hotspurs.
That may very well be true, but the second part of my mind is probably the one that was closer to being a reality, because at least players on the field prevent... Look, if you're going to come at me and say that that would have been bogus, you're right. Liverpool were far better and deserved all 3 points. There's no question about it. But it was a referee that prevented Tottenham from getting a 2-2 draw rather than the players themselves.
What prevented Liverpool from that being a beatdown to reckon with the beatdown that they received, that Liverpool themselves received at Wembley in this fixture last season, was prolificacy in front of the goal. Was in some cases, maybe a little bit of greed, maybe a little bit of want in the heart of Mohamed Salah, that he felt he had to score to justify his existence. Like, that's what kept it the wolf from the door with you, my friend.
Look, I'm not meaning to argue about that. I'm just saying that was very close to being a reality.
Oh, yeah. And the referee, in my book, could easily have given it. And it was pure nonsense from Liverpool in the last few minutes that even this could have been a reality, that there was a penalty given. And you know what? If you want me to say, it probably was a penalty. But that's not the story of the game.
Yeah, I wasn't even intending that to be.
You made it option two in your mind tank.
Well, because I'm saying just as easy. That was kind of the funniness of this game, is that just as easily as it could have been 5-1 is how easily it could have been 2-2. That's the weird thing about this sport. We talk about it all the time. Don't lose. Hey, come on, relax.
It's too many emotions in so many minutes.
No, because you came in here expecting me to be combative, so you're looking for any reason to jump down my throat. I tip my hat to Liverpool.
They
won the game and deserve to win it. I'm just saying that for as bad as Spurs were, it's amazing that they were that close to walking out of there with a point. They were bad. We'll get to... There's many different elements of it. I guess the things that come to my mind the quickest... I wanted to ask you about Michel Vorm, because I read somewhere, and I don't remember where, Sky Sports, somewhere, that they referred to his performance as arguably the worst by a keeper so far this season.
Well, we're now, only 5 games in.
You're right, but there's been a lot of games. Now, I'm going to expose my pea brain for the sport here when I say, I'm not going to stand here and tell you that I thought he was necessarily good, but I need your help in telling me what they were referring to. Because on the first goal that Wijnaldum scored, I guess you could say that Vorm maybe was late getting to that.
Andrew.
But he
punched it and it spun behind him. It was shocking. And what's worse was that clearly Jurgen Klopp and his team had looked at the Watford game and thought, this guy's not at it. He's not up to it. And there was evidence in that game. Didn't he kick the ball straight out for a corner kick against Watford?
Yeah.
Like that he's unnerved by this extended run in the team, or he's not what he was when he was at Swansea. And James Milner, I said, do you want to hear something? And this is not me being some kind of genius, but the corner's coming up, and I was sitting watching it with my dad, who is a psycho Liverpool fan. I said, Dad, they should just swing that in on top of him. I said, I don't fancy him. And Liverpool had already got that figured out. Brilliant corner. He gets out in front, and instead of pushing people out of the way and being, you know, a kind of an assertive goalkeeper, he punches it. It spins behind him. It's cleared. It goes in the... And even his attempt to keep the header out was... Wijnaldum's header out was poor.
The second goal, you could say that on the deflection off the inside of the bar, maybe he should have snagged that. If he does, it's an amazing play.
For me, that one was... He can get away with that one in my mind. There's a couple of people on Twitter in particular said he should have got to that.
Yeah. When it's slowed down in slow motion, I think it's easier to say that than in real time when you don't know what's about to happen.
He's on his back. He's looking up at the crossbar. It's a weird position.
Really kind of a bang-bang play. And then aside from that, I mean, what do you have, 8 saves in the game, I think? Something close.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of them were straight at him.
Well, but I love how keepers don't get credit for that. You're right, but like, isn't a lot of goalkeeping positionally based, like being in the right, making sure you're in the right places to cut off certain angles? Like,
yeah,
I feel like keepers probably should get more credit for the shots being right at them because they have something to do with that.
That's certainly the American stats view. If you look at anybody on Twitter, like the big guys like Michael Goodman and Cali, they all say, well, those are good shots and the keeper should get credit for saving those. No, I mean, they're straight down the barrel, if you know what I mean.
Like,
Look, for example, at the Salah chance where he breaks away off that wonderful pass from Kieran Dyer, or Eric Dyer. Yeah. He's straight through, and I mean, you're expecting Salah to go low, and he goes at a nice height, etc., etc.
Yeah.
But I mean, it could have been a massacre if those had got...
I know. And I know you wanted to rip Eric Dyer. Before you do that, I do want to go back to the first goal for a moment, because there's one thing that I don't want to allow to get lost in the shuffle here, because, okay, it's easy to get on Michel Form for what he did on the first goal there. But I'm sorry. I love Christian Eriksen. He's a phenomenal player, but none of that should have ever happened. Well, because his header to allow that corner to even take place was atrocious, and you can't do those things against Liverpool.
Gary Neville gave him a pass because of the spin of the ball when it came back. Like, it's basically popped up, excuse me, and he's headed it, and it's spun, and it's just... He tried to put it down as one of those freaks of nature plays, but I totally understand what you're saying. It was so poor.
It was all, and it was like, it was one of those moments where after it occurred, you're like, oh God. Like, you just know, you've seen this script before. You know how these things go. When a guy screws up that badly, it feels like it always comes back to bite you, and it did.
But it was symptomatic of the sloppy play throughout Spurs' game.
Yeah.
Let me talk about Dyer.
Okay.
And first of all, the formation was... 4-4-2 really, but in a diamond in midfield, which put Dyer to the right of that diamond, and he didn't seem comfortable there. And at the base of that diamond was Moussa Dembele. I would have probably, considering Dembele's penchant for getting forward, dribbling, and his creative stylings, I would have put him there. But the midfield was generally a mess. I'm not even sure how true that diamond even stayed for most of the game, and Harry Winks and Dyer did not have good games. But that said, for a while, Naby Keita did not get to do what he liked to do either. So there was a moment in the middle of the second half where those midfields seemed to be nullifying themselves. But Dyer, for me, again, it just comes back to what I've always said about him. I don't think he gives Spurs enough on, to use, I suppose, an American football phrase, both sides of the ball. Defensively, not that good. Attacking creatively, not that good on the ball. And I told you I was going to rip him, and I suppose...
No, have at it. I thought he was poor also.
So the owner of Spurs is Joe Louis, Bahamas-based billionaire. And Christie's in New York announced last Thursday that it was selling Portrait of an Artist with an estimate in the region of $80 million. The painting... by Hockney is reportedly owned by Joe Louis. I think $80 million would have gotten you a better centre midfield option than Dyer. And I pondered this purchase all weekend in light of Dyer's performance. And I think that a portrait of Eric Dyer passing the ball, be it surrealist, abstract, cubism, impressionistic, would have been preferable to the actual Eric Dyer. I want you to imagine this, Andrew. At the very least, you could have quipped that Spurs midfield was full of artistry. I want you to imagine beside Moussa Dembele in the middle of the park is a portrait of Eric Dyer. That's how bad he was.
I agree with you, but that was very annoying to listen to. Let's talk about Liverpool. This obviously wasn't just about Spurs. For me, man of the match I thought was Firmino. Even his goal aside, I just felt like he was involved in just all of their positive moves forward. Took an injury near the end of the game, which is probably going to keep him out, actually, of their
eye gouging, blatant eye gouging.
Okay, relax.
But but that was symptomatic of what was going wrong with Spurs. So can I just finish with Spurs for a second?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the wide areas, Andrew, I was watching on the plane back from Ireland, Pep, All or Nothing, and he talked about Liverpool. Guys, we cannot allow it. We cannot allow this area. You know the way he does.
Right, right.
And he talked about that area in behind the fullbacks, Trippier and Rose. Now, Poch is a brilliant manager, in my view. He's got to know that. Where do they get torched for the second goal in behind? Where do they get torched down the right-hand side, spaces in behind? Vertonghen's pulled out of the centre. In that moment where he stabs Firmino in the eye, that's because he's way out of position. Because why? There's all that big space and he's trying to cover the space. So I just thought a team as intelligently put together as Pochettino's would be ready for that. I can't believe they allowed any of that space there, that they weren't much more conservative in their approach.
And they were stretched all game long. And that, look, that's a credit to Liverpool. And this, I mean, it's disappointing, obviously, for Tottenham because, you know, I feel like coming off of the Watford defeat, this was, in some ways, a referendum on how the early part of their season was going to be viewed.
Right.
You had the Manchester United win, then you had a loss to Watford, and this almost felt like a tiebreaker between, okay, is this team at, was the Watford loss an aberration or not? And the fact that they were outplayed in the way that they were, I think it proves a lot of the questions about them coming into the season. Are they a deep enough squad? Are they exhausted from the past World Cup over the summer? Are
now,
guys
also,
in poor form?
We should say missing Dele Alli is a huge thing because the creative spark that he can bring that just wasn't there. And what was happening was you had Christian Eriksen dropping much, much deeper to try and be creative because Dembele couldn't do it and neither could Eric Dier or Harry Winks. And if you look at the best chance of the game for Spurs outside of the goal, that came from a long ball over the top and some excellent skill from Lucas Moura to hit the outside of the post. But that was an aberration. You know what I mean? It was because Eriksen was forced to be that deep to play that ball. I think Eriksen ideally would have been up with the play, much closer to the action.
Yeah, I mean, the discouraging stuff for me was that Harry Kane, once again, just didn't really feel all that involved in the game.
But I mean, they had a lot of the ball, but where was that link to him? Moura and him don't really operate together in like a traditional big man, small man role or in a traditional two.
I guess, but it's funny. This sport, like, it's just so fickle. Everything that we're saying about Tottenham right now, all this negativity, they've got a lead in the 70th minute against Watford. And then the last 20 minutes goes the way that it does on two set
pieces.
Yeah, but
generally
then,
they didn't play well against Watford.
No, you're
Watford.
Right, but that's fair. But like, and then against Liverpool, I talked about the fine margin between this ending a 2-2 draw. Like on a different day, both of those games end differently, and like who knows what we're sitting here talking about. So that's the only thing trying to like keep me tethered to sanity. You know, is that like I don't want to freak out over a result against a Liverpool team that Liverpool is better than Tottenham, and a result against Watford where, like, I don't know, sometimes those things happen. Like, people are using those games to just make these wide sweeping statements about the state of Tottenham and how it's just chaos right now. Maybe that will be proven to be true, but I feel like I'm not, for what my expectation was coming into the season. I can't sit here and say that this is wild what's going on right now.
Can I offer you crumbs of comfort from former Liverpool great Graham Souness, who was on Sky?
Sure.
He said Tottenham won't face that level of pressure every week. Liverpool are in your face all the time. Most teams aren't at that level. But a listener, Ashfaq Rahman, he talks about, is the Spurs not needing any changes debate any clearer? I think that part of it is on depth. Are Trippier and Rose good enough in a back four? I think Trippier is so good going forward. I'm not so sure about Rose anymore.
Well, it's not to cut you off, but I want to just go back on the depth thing because I've brought this up before. And again, like, I don't want to sound like I'm contradicting myself because I wholeheartedly believe that they made a mistake in not signing anybody. But before we attribute depth to one of the reasons that this didn't go well for Spurs, let's just look at the guys that they were able to bring in off the bench in this game. Son, who will come back and be a factor for them as he
sure.
was last season. Lamella, who came on and scored the goal.
I don't think Lamella's good enough.
All right, fine. And Wanyama, right? He was the other sub. So, I mean, these are guys who, like, they could easily be starting for Tottenham on a week-in, week-out basis. So that, like, that is meaningful that they do have guys on the bench who can still... It's not like they have 11 guys and that's it. We're going with these 11 week-in, week-out. Like, they can rotate the squad. Davinson Sanchez didn't play. It's not just depth. They need to make signings. That's obviously important, but I feel like there's more to whatever their problems are right now. It's more complex than just that.
I would agree with that, and I still think there's something to be said for the lethargy in their play being World Cup related. I still think there's something in that.
That could very well be. You have anything else on Liverpool before we move on?
You asked me, was this the most compelling evidence yet that Liverpool are true title contenders?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say no, because I thought Spurs were that poor. I would say Leicester.
But that has to mean something, because Tottenham are a good team. For Liverpool to make them look that way.
It does, but performance-wise, in terms of eking out a win at Leicester, that was the kind of game. In terms of chances, Leicester v Spurs, Leicester had far more chances to equalise and send Liverpool home not feeling great about themselves. But Liverpool prevailed in that one. And I just feel that one, for me, was more of a statement. But beating Spurs...
You are so condescending. You know exactly what you're doing right here. You're trying to get under my skin by being condescending about this.
If I said...
I won't let you do it.
If I said it was only Spurs, That's the only way I could irk you more.
I give you credit. You're very bright. You've known me for many years, and you just know the right buttons to push.
You're a liar,
but you're very smart. Let's see. Chelsea and Cardiff, 4-1. It goes to the Blues, and their great start to the season under Maurizio Sarri continues. No one was really all that high on them coming into
Not
the season.
Not us either.
No, and yet here they sit right now. So, like, was everyone, I don't want to say everyone, but was everyone wrong? Or are you just sitting here waiting for the other shoe to drop? Because I don't know if that's going to happen. They're not going to win every game, but, like, I think they might actually be really good.
Right. I've come up with two reasons why people may have come into the season with a little bit of negativity. One, because no one really thought Sarri could introduce Sarri ball and get a system up and running that quickly. Jorginho settled in when it looked like in the charity shield he wouldn't, because he seemed totally out of his depth. And possibly one of the best players in the world is down with the program. 5 goals in 5 games for
JJ,
Eden Hazard.
Right there. That's it. For me, that's it.
Can I give you my second one?
Well, let me just, while we're talking about Hazard, let me just say, I mean, he registers the hat trick in this game. His fingerprints are all over pretty much everything good that has happened for them so far this season. But it's not just that he's scoring goals. He's doing everything. I think I saw the stat that he also won 60% of his duels from this game.
I'd love to see
He played in 2 good crosses, which I think was as many as anybody else played in the whole game.
And his dribbling stats.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he's always excelled in that area.
And he loves Sarri's style. This suits him.
It's interesting because Sarri, it feels like, he sees what he had. He recognized very early on, I think, what he had in this squad. And he recognized that up front, Giroud and Morata may not give him the consistent scoring that he needs. And so he's kind of, like, he's going to rotate, he says now, Morata and Giroud, which I wonder if that's going to work. If that will allow, like, any one guy to develop true chemistry.
But I don't think either of them are Sarri-style players. So rotating them is not going to make that much difference to the way he wants to play.
But what he has in Giroud is a player who was willing to hold play. Like, what we saw Olivier Giroud's role basically turn into for France at the World Cup, where, like, scoring goals wasn't even his primary objective, or even taking shots. Everything was about holding up play and allowing Eden Hazard to get involved and get on the ball and score goals. 2 of the assists were from Giroud in this game for Hazard's goal. So,
yeah, so he's found a way to use him, which is brilliant management.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
But I would say this. Huddersfield, Newcastle, Bournemouth, Cardiff. That's a gentle start. And any recent iteration of Chelsea will be expected to pick up 3 points against all of them. Arsenal were the only...
I was going to say you skipped one.
No, Arsenal were the only top game, top team, rather, to have played against them so far.
I think they're the real deal. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but if Hazard... Like, we've seen the years where Hazard plays like this, and those years always end well for Chelsea.
I think they're going to beat most teams in the league. It's how they do against the cities. And I would say the cities and the Liverpools, really. And maybe the Spurs, but probably not.
Well, I do wonder, too, how much of this, you know, no Champions League to focus on. It's kind of like this is it for them. And maybe in the past that's helped them have bounce back years after terrible years. So, you know, who knows? But for me, it's right now it's Hazard. And sure, he's gotten some nice help from guys like Pedro and Willian as well, but I think he's been sensational. Manchester City 3-0 Fulham. Fulham, JJ, not getting off to the kind of start that I was really hoping this season that they would get off to. But let's talk about City. Pep, he said afterwards that he was not at all pleased with his team in this one. He kind of like read them the riot act, if you saw some of the quotes. Are you seeing what he's seeing, or is this just managing 101, how to combat complacency? Because that's what I thought this was.
It's Pep 101. If we've learned anything from All or Nothing, we've learned this. He is so intense. And you want to see some of his talks after games where they've won. Like, In the middle of the season, there's this scene in the dressing room. I can't remember who they just played. And he's talking about Crystal Palace the next game. Because, guys, they will be right there. And he gets really intense about Palace and talks about Selhurst Park. This is the way he manages. He wants them fully focused. You're right about the complacency. He does not want that to creep in. Because I wonder, does he look at last season? And does he look at going to Goodison Park and blowing Everton off the field and then playing Liverpool in the Champions League and getting blown off the field themselves. Does he want to try and generate that kind of huge, I mean, the best word is intensity or pep-tensity. Like, he wants that tension in the squad where they're not comfortable.
Right. You're right. He thrives on it. And look, too, like the way he's able to rotate the squad. Leroy Sané comes in. He scores in 2 minutes. Man, what an incredible boost that is, A, for the team, but for Sané in particular, who's been just so maligned through Germany, through the start for Manchester City. I mean, like, it's every button Pep pushes, it just seems to work. I don't know. I watched almost this entire game.
I couldn't.
That's right, because there's many rules.
The blackout, basically. Yeah. So, they only show one 3 o'clock game.
What was the one you got, if not this?
It was Arsenal Newcastle.
Oh, okay. I could see that. But you know, in between, like, I was also playing with my son at the same time, and so it's sometimes kind of hard. And he's like whining that why are we not watching Paw Patrol?
But it's a good point.
But from what I watched, like, I don't know. When I saw Pep's quotes afterwards, I was like, well, I must have just been watching a different game, because it seemed like they were pretty much dominant all the way through. What, you know how much I love Ryan Sessegnon. Raheem Sterling owned him in this game. He really owned him.
You know, we talk about coaching, and we talk about the two best coaches right now, or maybe the three, Pochettino, Klopp, and Guardiola. Improving players is such a big thing for them. Look at the job Guardiola has done with Raheem Sterling, and look at the job Klopp has done with, like, James Milner.
Right.
Like, seriously, this is really good coaching. You can see the difference in their games. Raheem Sterling is a far better player than he was under Pellegrini or Brendan Rodgers.
And the next guy that it looks like maybe we're seeing that with is Bernardo Silva for Pep. That was the one guy after this game that Pep kind of gave effusive praise to for how he's come in and how he's really improved himself from year to year. I know Manchester City were very fond of the fact that after Portugal were eliminated from the World Cup, Bernardo Silva was the only guy who was at the World Cup who also came to the United States to play with this team while they were on tour here in America. So I think that went a long way. He's getting chances now. I mean, you can't predict that Kevin De Bruyne is going to go out with an injury, but he's filling in, and he's sensational. He's another great talent that now we're seeing Manchester City can just plug right in. And it's why they're as great as they are.
And Guardiola has said that he will be with me as long as I'm at Manchester City. He said that last season when he was using him sparingly.
Well, he also loves him in the locker room. It seems like Pep talks about how he gets along with everyone.
He's
everyone
one of
loves
the fun
him.
guys. He's one of the fun guys.
A few other games quickly to mention here. Bournemouth absolutely taking it to Leicester. I do think highly of Leicester. Jamie Vardy came back for this one, but I mean, they were down 4-0 at one point. Now, I know they did fight back.
3-0 at halftime.
Yeah, they did get two goals late, very late, 88th and 89th minutes. Are they in some trouble, though?
Yeah, and I think their manager is as well. Now, everything that could possibly go wrong did go wrong in this game. I'm not sure if it was a second yellow or even a first yellow for Wes Morgan. I really don't.
What is he doing?
I thought there were two bad decisions, Andrew. I do.
What?
I think the second one...
I thought the second one almost could have been a straight red.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I just don't understand anything.
Let's
anymore.
Not. We don't need to go through that one. But Bournemouth cut them open so easily. Like, it was crazy. And they look slow centrally. And Puel looks a little bit out of ideas right now.
Yeah, maybe that could be. Look,
but don't
I
forget,
think we always knew that Riyad Mahrez leaving, it was going to call. There was just going to have to be some transition time when you lose such a key player.
But did you
on
not think
like
Madison
that.
Had settled quite well?
Yeah, he's been very good. But I do think that there's a... Look, the other thing, too, that I don't want to downplay here, very quietly, Bournemouth at home has become a very difficult place for visiting teams to go to. They've lost just two of their last 13 games at the Vitality, which is weird because it only seats 10,000 people. You wouldn't think that it's like this incredibly intimidating place to go
but
into.
That's
but
why,
teams have a really hard time going
But that's
there.
Why, because look how close the pitch is to the stands.
Yeah.
That is the thing that West Ham had at the Bowling Ground.
Right. No, it's a good point. So I don't want to just gloss over what Bournemouth are doing because they look really, really fun to watch. Joshua King has been great. Ryan Fraser looks like a great player.
Three goals already this season.
Yeah. So they're really fun to watch. What are they up to now? Fifth in the table?
Yeah, they're going to be in the Europa League next season.
They're the new Burnley. And once again, Eddie Howe is being re-anointed as the next England manager for when Gareth Southgate, I guess, inevitably...
Oh, yeah. And by the way, when Unai Emery has his next defeat for Arsenal, we've got a young English manager, right? He's at Bournemouth, right? He's done everything right. And we've got this Unai Emery's in at the Emirates, you know. Emirates, is there something going on there? Do you know, did somebody, he pay someone to get in
Who
there?
Who is this an impression of?
He said, I'm a general football guy. He sits at the end of the bar saying there's too many foreigners in the game, right? Far too many. Now, listening to American podcasts, Andrew Gundling.
Speaking of Arsenal, they get past Newcastle thanks to a couple maligned players. Granit Xhaka scoring for them, as well as Mesut Ozil. This was Ozil's 200th game for Arsenal. 66 assists, 38 goals, and 3 trophies won. Neither of us are Arsenal fans. Can you get a sense of whether or not Arsenal supporters like him? Because I still can't tell. The things that are said about Ozil in the media at large, like, is that just like things that pundits say or fans of other teams say, or do Arsenal fans also feel that way about him? Because overall, I do think he's been a pretty good player since he's gotten there.
Arsenal fans during Champions League games like to criticize him because there were some high profile moments where tackles were, runners weren't covered, particularly in that game away to Bayern Munich. He, you know, things like that they focus in on. But generally, they are quite quick to defend him. They say, you know, because he's got this great assist record and things like that, and his statistical contributions are there to be seen. So Arsenal fans are kind of spit on him, I would say. It depends. When he has his high-profile games where he goes missing or doesn't put in a shift, as the proper football men say, then he is the object of their ire.
I really do wonder. I wish there was a way to quantify this, and there's obviously not, but the I don't like your face factor, if you could put a stat to that. I really believe that Mesut Ozil has like the same ratio of good games to bad games among other players who are comparable to him. But I think that his bad games stand out because people don't like his facial expressions. Like, he looks
demeanor.
He looks almost like he can't help it, but he just looks disinterested at times.
Right.
It doesn't mean that he actually is.
Like a sullen child.
Right. But whether that's his body language or that's just like his natural appearance, it's unfair. But I really do wonder if that magnifies in people's minds when he doesn't play well.
He also joined Arsenal in a moment where they couldn't win silverware.
That's not true.
Well, the FA Cups, yeah, but the silverware they care about most, like being... I'll take back silverware and replace it with title challenging.
All right.
That kind of, you know, they suddenly found themselves, for that golden era under Wenger, they suddenly found themselves on the outside. And when they signed Ozil, don't forget, Andrew, Ozil was the big signing that Wenger wasn't making. They always said, oh, well, we're buying some 17-year-old French prospect, but we're not buying the big players. And they went out and bought a big player from Real Madrid, no less. A player who had, you know, a World Cup winner's medal. But it hasn't panned out the way that they would have wanted, considering the status of the signing and the money spent.
Yeah, that could be. Manchester United, the first team to beat Watford this season, as all of a sudden Romelu Lukaku appears to be hitting his stride, scored again. We don't have to go too in-depth on this, but like, for all the heat that was on Jose Mourinho, say, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, do you feel like that's subsided at all?
Yeah, it has somewhat, but it's because of the new role that United have taken on, which is perfectly laid out by Jonathan Liu in The Independent. You need to read this match report. If you're one of those listeners to our podcast who are triggered United fans, who can't take criticism of Mourinho or can't take people poking fun at the current status of the club, then avoid it. But it's basically plucky Manchester United win at Watford. That is the narrative now, right? Watford were a team that United used to swat aside. The fact that they went to Vicarage Road with trepidation says everything you need to know about where they're at in terms...
That's not totally fair. It says something about Watford. They just beat Spurs, you know, 2 weeks ago.
It says nothing about Watford. This is Manchester United, okay? And he notes in the opening paragraph of the piece how Rio Ferdinand said, maybe United can come there. I'd be confident they can go there and cause an upset.
Well,
all right,
that's a bit much.
I only saw highlights of the game, so I'm not going to come out and say United are back, but it was a good win against a good team, and plucky Manchester United have done it again.
And last but not least, Everton getting really kind of torn to shreds by West Ham.
Not strictly true.
Okay.
Everton had 16 attempts but could only manage 4 shots on target. Senk Tosun struggling in the absence of Richarlison, who was in the stands. And Pickford, who, Andrew, by the way, is so good with his feet, hashtag World Cup comments, passes straight to a West Ham player in the lead up to Yarmolenko's second. So you're 2-0 down straight away. And don't forget, they had, I know, Tosun had two really good chances that he should have converted, and Niasse smashed the bar from 8 yards towards the end of the game. So they have a problem that me and you identified before the season started, where are the goals going to come from? And it was the same problem last season.
Yeah, especially, like you say, with Richarlison not in the lineup for them. They're dealing with injuries in other places, too. I know Richarlison's not an injury-based one, but they have some problems right now. But props to West Ham. They desperately needed that. Just like that, West Ham and Everton have the same number of wins this season.
Crazy,
now,
isn't
Everton
it?
Have some draws where West Ham have a lot of losses. But yeah, Everton... a little bit slow in the new era here, which, again, I think was dramatically affected by Richarlison's headbutt against Bournemouth.
But definitely.
Let's see. A little closer to home. Speaking of Everton, their former manager, David Moyes, appears to have real interest in the Team USA job. Here's what he said. He said, "I would have to consider the USA job if I was approached because it's one of the big nations in world football with massive growth potential," Moyes told this to The Sun. He said, "They have a constantly improving league. You've got David Beckham's team coming into Miami and Nashville as well. So if it came up, I would have a real interest."
Right. The first part, fine, massive growth potential. The last sentence, just, it sounds like a man who's just had a conversation with a soccer fan in the US who's told him about the growth of the league, and he's remembered that much. Why would you reference a team that hasn't kicked a ball yet? Two teams.
You're right.
That haven't kicked a ball yet. Why wouldn't
What do they have anything to do with this?
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Now, he was unfairly mocked on Twitter. He was in the Meadowlands for one of the friendly games, or for the game against Brazil, obviously. And he was pictured on New Jersey Transit coming back from the game. And the caption was, "How the mighty have fallen." I use New Jersey
Yeah,
transit.
That's not cool.
That's not okay.
There's nothing wrong.
Come on, public transport's great.
Mayor Bloomberg used to take the subway to work every single day.
Yeah, no one said how the mighty have fallen there.
Yeah.
I mean...
No, I don't... That's ridiculousness. I asked the question here, does this excite you in any way? I don't mean that as a slight to Moyes.
No.
But it does... Like, for me, it doesn't. That doesn't necessarily mean it would be a bad appointment. I don't know. I kind of just keep going back to the idea that, like, whoever comes in and manages... Ernie Stewart seems like he's ultimately
so
in charge.
Right. You are so right. What if Moyes doesn't fit Ernie's profile of the manager he wants to tell how to run the team?
Well, then he's not going to get hired.
Well, here we go. I've decided that it's not exciting, but it would be a pragmatic appointment. I've done pros and cons.
I'm curious to hear how this would be a pragmatic appointment.
Well, that's in the pros section, if I may.
Yeah, start with that.
We need defensive organization and to be hard to beat, particularly on the road. And Moyes is a track record of this, most recently at West Ham. It's also a man on a career rejuvenation path. He would attack the job with vim and vigour because his ultimate goal would be to get back into management in England or Scotland or somewhere. And he would see this as a stepping stone to that. So his ability to work with limited means and adaptability, like the way he was able to last season identify Arnautovic as a centre forward and play him there because it was a needs must scenario and get the best out of him, I thought was good. I thought it was good management.
Okay.
And look, we have a mixture of talented players playing in Europe and certain talented MLS players and then other players who are, you know, average, let's be honest. And I think he'd be able to work with them. The cons, dangers of appointing managers with their best years, I mean, a considerable time ago. I can tell you with Martin O'Neill, right now we are experiencing that. Innovation, new methods, being able to talk to players in a certain fashion. I would worry about that a little bit. Lack of knowledge of the particularities of the American soccer system, that would be a problem. Do you want a manager whose style may not accommodate the more younger technical players that are coming to the fore right now? Your McKinney's, your Pulisic's, that would be a question. And my final con is... Ernie Stewart. Does he fit Ernie Stewart's profile? Probably not, I would say. I'm guessing.
Well, I don't know that we know that. He might be willing to.
Well, we don't know what Ernie Stewart wants in a manager.
Yeah, but I don't know that that's a con necessarily. Ernie Stewart, what he wants for this team might be exactly right.
We
don't know.
Do you think David Moyes could qualify the US for a World Cup is the question?
Yes, I do.
I absolutely think that.
But a little bit of American arrogance, I guess. We got to bring that back.
Oh, we got zapped again.
Yeah, but I you could have said almost any name there. And I would have said, yeah, I think that they can do it. Ah! All right, I get it.
Are we overrating the managerial position right now in the US? I think I saw Taylor Twellman on ESPN go a bit crazy about the fact they haven't sorted someone out at this point. I'm fine with it.
Well, they say that they're going to have one in place by the end of the year.
Why set that limit for yourself now?
I don't know, but I think that's inappropriate. I think that's fine. I understand that. Going into the new year, you're going to want somebody who can start preparing them for the Gold Cup. I know that you will.
Yeah, and you'll have a camp in January, which is probably important.
I think it makes sense. I think that's appropriate. I'm
not freaking out that they haven't appointed
someone. No, me neither.
I'm not.
Yeah, I agree on that. Let's see. We've got some things happening in MLS, but JJ, before we get to that, now let me ask you this question. When you realized that you were starting to go bald,
yeah,
what was your decision on how to prevent that from happening?
Got up in the morning, went straight to my gas station to look for something.
And how did that turn out?
All I got was a slowly rotating hot dog that had been there since the mid-60s.
Right, which is why you went completely bald. You now have a toupee on.
Correct.
You fool a lot of people.
I know.
But I am not one of those people. Now, there's a very easy way that you could have avoided all that embarrassment.
What? Is there?
It's called Hims, JJ.
Tell me more.
66% of men lose their hair by the age of 35.
Get out.
You were somewhere around, 13, 14? Premature baldness.
I was 15, and I was as bald as Aaron Robin was when he was 12.
It's so funny. When he was 22, if you had told me he was 42, I would have said, yeah, I know.
He was perennially 27.
Yeah, he could have used Hims, quite frankly. Because when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. You've missed your chance. It's easier to keep the hair you have rather than replace the hair that you've lost. It's that hairline slowly starting to move backwards. Oh, that's what gets you. You look in the mirror and you just think, what happened? It was there just a day ago. So I ask you this. Do you want a bald spot to pop up or do you want to do something about it first? Do you want your hairline to recede or do you want to do something about it first? Why do you guys turn to weird solutions like JJ and go to a gas station and order these gas station supplements? It doesn't work. Not like Hims. 4hims.com. That's your solution, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness for men. Now, thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. No snake oil pills or, like we said, the gas station supplements. It's prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting rooms either. No awkward in-person doctor visits that save hours. Just by going to 4hims.com. I had a doctor visit once in Manhattan that was a true nightmare. I could see the doctor in the back. She was just talking to a friend of hers that I guess had come in. And I was now significantly late for work because of it. And by the time she finally got to me, I said, you know what? My appointment was 90 minutes ago. Bye. I'm going somewhere else. I'm not dealing with this. Should have just said 4hims. Although what I was there for had nothing to do with hair loss. But
sure,
nevertheless,
sure it didn't.
It was a bad waiting room experience. It's also easy. Just answer a few quick questions and a doctor will review and prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. So here's how you do it. Order now. Listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or pharmacy. Go to 4hims.com/offside. That's FORHIMS.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside. It's great. It's a great product, everybody, if you're going bald. Let's see. MLS, a couple things that I wanted to mention. Of course, some wild games over the weekend as we begin to really hit the stretch run here. We got to start with the LA Galaxy as they're involved in yet another epic game this season, this time coming up on the losing end, 5-3 at Toronto. Before we get to what was kind of the main story to come out of this, I do wonder, does the win change your mind in any way, shape, or form about what Toronto can achieve this season?
Six games left.
Yeah.
They're 9 points off. They need 3 wins. It's doable, but...
Well, they're going to need some help. They don't control their own
destiny.
No,
they don't. But it's MLS, and help could be forthcoming. Are they going to win? I think they need to win the next 3.
Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
So can we be confident in them doing that? I don't know.
Then there was this, JJ, as we moved from Toronto to L.A.
Here's Dos Santos. Lifts it into the area. Ebro!
I know you so well, and so with that in mind, I literally put on the rundown here a question or a comment. I look forward to some JJ smugness to tell me why this goal wasn't actually all that impressive. So I know you, and I know that that's what you're going to do.
It's a brilliant piece of improvisation. I'm not sure I've seen anyone score a goal quite like that in that fashion,
right,
except maybe the man himself. Actually, he scored a goal when he was in Italy, and I think he stabbed it at the near post, and it was similar to that. It wasn't similar. It wasn't as good, but it was pretty good.
He's never done it before.
But it was a wonderful goal. But the goalkeeper sees it all happen in front of him. He thinks about coming, which he should have, takes a step, then changes his mind, and is thus absolutely lost. I think he should have come and punched it, but that's a minor quibble on a great goal.
Okay.
That's fair.
I suppose that is fair. My goal of the season, for sure, in MLS, maybe in the world. Yep. I've never seen anything like it before. The first time I saw it, couldn't believe what I just saw. Goal of the season. And I don't even know what's close.
I liked Acosta's from this weekend for DC United.
Okay. I'm not saying there have been other great goals, but for me, when I see something, I've watched a lot of soccer, and when I see something that I have never seen before, that's it.
It's still not better than Zola versus Norwich.
All right. I mean, if you want to go back, what are we talking, 25 years or
flying back? Well, I'm trying to think of things of a certain kung fu.
Then I would say
kung fu-esque style. Still not better than that.
I've never seen anything like it. Now, he also made news after the game as well when he said this about Michael Bradley. I don't know how this came up exactly, but Zlatan managed to get in there. Quote, he thinks he's the philosopher of football.
I don't know what that means.
I took it to basically mean that Michael Bradley thinks that he's the end-all be-all, that he knows all there is to know about this sport. And I picture Zlatan kind of smugly saying it and smiling and you know, being sarcastic. What else could he have possibly meant by it?
Well, he could have been quoting Kierkegaard in the middle of the game or perhaps musing upon upon Hegel. You don't know that.
All right. It was not said in a complimentary way. He thinks he's the philosopher of football.
Maybe he ran by.
All right, you're not being
maybe
serious.
Maybe he ran by.
Here's what
by,
I'll say. I don't know Michael Bradley. I don't know Michael Bradley
you're
personally.
You're just going to cut me off.
I've never met him. I've never spoken to him. So I don't know that I feel qualified necessarily to sit here and kind of judge whatever the kind of person he is. But I feel like we're starting to get little tidbits. You know, ever since specifically the U.S. lost and didn't qualify for Russia, from other guys where you're just starting to see some like little red flags here and there. There's this with Zlatan, which, you know, I don't know how seriously people want to take it because I don't know how well Zlatan actually knows Michael Bradley.
Right.
But then you get other things. Jimmy Conrad, former U.S. international, he was on Big Soccer, I guess, and he said this about the U.S. team as a whole, but specifically with Bradley. He said, I don't think we should be playing any of our older players from here on out. Michael Bradley, for me, should absolutely not be involved with the team from here on out. He's done his service. Thank you very much. You've had a great career for the national team. You've had over 100 caps, but the guy is, and I'm being completely frank here with everybody, he's a super alpha male know-it-all, and we don't need that vibe in the team anymore. Plus, we need the younger players to solve these problems on their own so that new leaders can emerge from the younger group as opposed to them always deferring to the other guys. That Zlatan.
Plus, we had some anonymous quotes. I think I can't remember which article it was during the fallout, which talked about Bradley too, not in the most complimentary light.
And like I said,
I
want to reiterate that I don't know him, so I feel like part of me feels kind of uncomfortable sitting here and judging his character because that's not really a fair thing to do when you've never had any interaction with a person. I'm just solely going off of what we've heard here. Maybe there is some truth, not to like anything having to do with him being a bad guy or anything like that, but the last part of what Jimmy Conrad says, the super alpha male, it might be hard for younger players to flourish in an environment where maybe they're, you know, maybe he makes them uncomfortable in some way, or maybe they do defer to him too much because of his kind of seniority status and leadership role.
I don't think he's deferring. I think what Jimmy's saying is he's overbearing in his role as a leader. Leadership is often soft touch.
Yeah.
Leadership is often example. And he may be one of those guys in the dressing room who is giving it a lot of talk, a lot of encouragement, a lot of kind of input, and is not doing it on the field. Well, that could be the case, because he certainly wasn't doing it for the US men's national team. He was one of many veterans who wasn't. But it's hard then. Leadership is example as much as anything. Like when, and I know in the current climate he's not the best guy to quote, but he's the guy I know the best. Like, Roy Keane didn't have to say very much when he was playing the way he was playing. He led by example. And he did say a lot, but his performances backed that up. Bradley's didn't.
There's another quote from Jimmy Conrad in that same interview where he says, "I remember I had a former defender who played in the 2014 World Cup with the U.S. He came up to me and was like, 'I don't know how to talk to Michael Bradley during a game. Can you help me figure out things I can say to him that's going to get his attention?' That's a problem, because if you have your leaders that aren't listening to their teammates, that's a big problem, and I'm sure we can dissect what that means in the bigger picture, why we didn't qualify, so on and so forth." It's a red flag. It's only one guy's opinion, although Jimmy Conrad is now citing someone else who seems to be of a like-mindedness. These are things to keep in mind when we do start bringing in. Because, like I said on the last podcast, veterans are going to start coming back to the team. It's not just going to be this group that Dave Sarokin has been putting out there over the last several months. You're going to see veteran players. You know, maybe this isn't just about what some of these guys offer on the field, but what are they like off of it? Are they the right kind of personalities to mentor these young players? And maybe there's questions about Michael Bradley and whether or not he's a guy to do that.
Well, I mean, we already know that they couldn't mentor them to the World Cup, so, and they'd done it several times themselves. It kind of baffles me. He must exude it very strongly in 90 minutes for Zlatan to come up with that.
Yeah.
Like, what was he doing that made Zlatan feel that way?
I don't know. I would have loved, these guys should be mic'd up. You should have a couple guys mic'd up. They do it in every other sport. It's time. I want to hear what was being said down there that would get Zlatan to say something.
Yeah,
like
don't
that.
Mic up Brad Guzan again.
A couple other mid-game. You didn't like that?
Ugh.
A couple other things real quick here. Bradley Wright Phillips wills the Red Bulls to a 3-3 draw with rival DC United. Wayne Rooney scoring another goal as New York continues to very quietly, like every year, remain one of the best teams in the league. But will they be right when it matters most? Of course, come playoff time. That is the question that has always eluded them. And last but not least, arguably the most important result of the weekend was Montreal handing Philly a 4-1 beatdown, as this kind of keeps Toronto at bay. Along with a couple other Eastern Conference teams,
that's
DC among
win.
Them. Yeah, Jim Curtin, I saw afterwards for Philadelphia, was just basically flabbergasted by it, said, "I don't even know if I'm going to watch the tape. It was a terrible performance. There's not really a whole lot to take from it." So it seems like he's just moving on and doesn't really know. I mean, the Union were coming out of a pretty good spell there. So maybe that's the right move. I'll tell you what, we got What to Watch For, Champions League, which we'll get to quickly. But first, a quick break. We'll be right back with that coming up next. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. Quick What to Watch For to go through. Champions League, it returns Tuesday at the new start time. Double headers this year, folks, so get ready. Don't forget about those 12:55 p.m. Eastern time starts. And also don't forget that these games are not on Fox anymore, and Fox Sports 1 and FS2. Uh-uh. We're in a brave new world of Turner, TNT, and other channels that I will have to now familiarize myself with.
I don't know what's going on.
It's going to take some adjusting.
Ugh.
It certainly is going to take some adjusting. 12:55, Inter and Spurs. Inter, it's two teams that are kind of hitting this game at just like the wrong time. It's sort of like a something's got to give game, as Inter have just one win through four in Serie A.
The only thing about Inter is they created a lot more chances in their loss to Parma than Spurs did against Liverpool.
Well, Spurs, of course, with the two straight losses. Little worried for Tottenham. No Hugo Lloris, no Dele Alli. Kieran Trippier and Toby Alderweireld also not making the trip to Milan this one as well. I have absolutely no clue how to feel heading into this game. Well, I do know how to feel, and it's not a great feeling.
Trepidatious.
Yeah, yeah. Also 12:55 from that same group, Barcelona and PSV Eindhoven. I just wanted to say, nothing on Barcelona right now. They're kind of doing sort of what we would expect them to do so far this season. But PSV is kind of the quiet dark horse from this group. They've got 5 wins in their first 5 games in the Dutch Eredivisie.
They smashed Den Haag 7-0.
Through their last 2 games, they've won by a combined score of 13-1. Chucky Lozano, who we've all been just so high on from before the World Cup and through the World Cup, he's got 6 goals already.
And he's also been talking about how he nearly ended up at Barcelona. Or so, how they talked about buying him.
Now, it's a tough one for them because they're going to be in Barcelona, but I'm very curious about that game. 3 o'clock, Monaco and Atletico Madrid. It's been a disappointing start to the season, quite frankly, for Atletico Madrid.
Atleti need a boost here.
Yeah.
They drew with Eibar at the weekend.
This is the place where they have to get. I mean, Monaco have also started the season poorly. They're 15th right now in Ligue 1. But for Atletico, in a season where we thought they'd finish, you and I both predicted them to finish ahead of Real Madrid and keep pace with Barcelona. It is not going that way so far. So yes, this would be a nice moment for them to get that kind of boost that we're talking about. Just not scoring goals, just 3 goals so far in the league season for them. 3 o'clock, Club Brugge and Borussia Dortmund. Is Christian Pulisic expected back, I believe, for Dortmund?
Yeah, after muscular problems have kept him out for the last 2 games.
Yeah. Also 3 o'clock, all these other ones, 3 o'clock Eastern time. Galatasaray and Lokomotiv Moscow. 3 o'clock, Liverpool and PSG, JJ.
I'm so excited.
I'm sure.
And I'm not... When a star of the stature of Neymar comes to town, you're obviously worried about his ability and his skill, but I'm thinking of the last time this kind of happened to Liverpool in the group stage when Real Madrid came and it was Ronaldo and we got torched. He was brilliant that night under Brendan Rodgers, our first time back in the Champions League for a few years. This doesn't feel like that. I feel confident.
Unfortunately, probably not going to have Firmino for this one.
Yeah.
I believe they're saying that Daniel Sturridge is going to get the start. That's interesting.
That is interesting, considering the way we play in the Champions League is even more high press, high pressure than it is in the Premier League, or appears to be anyway. Yeah, that's not great. And that's all down to old Scratchy himself.
Timothy Weah not in the squad for PSG.
A little bit disappointing.
Yeah, very sad. Also, Buffon suspended. As you remember his antics about the official last year.
I've forgotten that.
Who ruined his dream. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And I believe Marco Verratti also out with a suspension for PSG. So a little bit, both squads maybe a little bit undermanned. Should be a great game, though. Red Star Belgrade against Napoli. Napoli have been very good so far. Wins over AC Milan, Fiorentina, Lazio. And then Schalke versus FC Porto. Weston McKennie bruised his knee for the U.S. against Mexico, so I don't know if he's going to play, but if he does or when he does, he'll become the 7th American to play for a Bundesliga side in the Champions League. Do you want to try to name the other 6?
No, I won't. Wow. I can do it, but no, I refuse.
Well, then I don't believe that you could. If you could do it, you would do it.
I can do it.
Okay.
Clint Dempsey.
You're not even going to try. Pulisic, Fabian Johnson, Julian Green, remember, under Pep, coming on as a late sub.
Oh, did he really?
Jermaine Jones, Landon Donovan, and Jovan Kurovsky.
Landon Donovan for Leverkusen, was it?
I believe so. I guess I'd have to go back and look at that for sure. And then Wednesday, I'll go through them real quick here. Also, that 12:55 early start, Ajax against AEK Athens. And Shakhtar Donetsk against Hoffenheim. The 3 o'clock games for you, Benfica versus Bayern Munich. Very unfortunate with what happened to Tolisso over the weekend. Torn ACL for Bayern Munich.
Oh, just awful.
Season over.
Yeah, dreadful. So early in September.
Like. I know. Manchester City and Lyon. Of all the clubs in this competition, Manchester City are the one that I think I'm honestly most intrigued by. Because, I mean, how many more years can we continue to say, okay, this is the year? No, this is the year. If not now, when?
No, I haven't been doing that with them at all.
I've been doing that for many years now.
What are you doing?
Real
Even
Madrid
when they got to the semi-final, I wasn't doing that. By the way, Lyon lost twice already in Ligue 1. I thought they'd be a firmer test for City. Maybe they won't be.
Real Madrid defending their crown against Roma. Valencia and Juventus. Eventful match for Juventus over the weekend as Cristiano Ronaldo scored his first 2 goals. They've got 12 points from their first 4 matches so far. Do Juve. One other thing happened in this game, but I'm going to mention that a little bit later on in the show.
Oh, interesting.
Viktoria Pilsen and CSKA Moscow at 3 o'clock, and then also 3 o'clock, Young Boys hosting Manchester United. Quickly, MLS, actually a few midweek ones. Oh, you're making a face. That usually signifies words.
No, that's fine.
Oh, okay. And then a couple midweek MLS matches out west. 10:30 p.m. Portland and Columbus. 11 o'clock, the Sounders and Philadelphia Union. Also 11 o'clock, San Jose and Atlanta United FC. So a busy midweek of soccer action for you here. Let's see. I want to bring it down the stretch, actually. But before we do that, I know you were very curious. You had something that you wanted to do with this.
Lampard and Gerrard, we're keeping an eye on you.
That's right, JJ, a Lampard-Gerrard watch. What was it that happened that sparked your interest to include this in the show?
Well, Robert, at Sunny SoCal, he hit us up with this. Steven Gerrard's Rangers beat Dundee 4-0 for their second win in the SPFL. It had been Rangers' worst start to a season in 29 years, but that is not the real story. The real story is Super Frankie Lampard getting a red card as Derby slumped to defeat away at Rotherham. There are new rules in the Championship, Andrew. Cards can be given to managers. Here is the former deflection king of Stamford Bridge talking to Rams TV about that red card ejection.
An afternoon of frustration boiling over for yourself.
Yeah, well, I obviously got sent off for leaving the technical area, which means they should send their manager off and my assistant off and their assistant off. If that's the rule, I actually need to. I read the rule with going into the season, and I didn't think you couldn't leave it. Maybe they should put like an electric current or something around the outside of it, because when I left it, there was no questions asked. That red came out pretty quickly again, so it was sharp today, the ref.
I think it's a good idea. Every time.
It's amazing the look on his face when they're defeated. The contempt for defeat this man has is unbelievable. And thankfully, he said later on in the interview, he goes, I'm not worried about it because in this championship, you get games are coming thick and fast. So you get a chance when something's gone wrong to put it right again quickly. So they're still, I think they're in seventh right now. They're doing okay. But yeah, Frank Lampard, kind of early in the career to get sent off.
Yeah, it sure is. Let's see. Are you ready for a little bit of this?
Red card.
Yes.
You go first.
My red card crosses over with your man of the match.
Oh.
Now, my red card is a very open red card. I need some help. I'm not sure who this goes out to, even. Is it to Wilfried Zaha or to those that he feels he's been persecuted by? But this is him talking about the perceived targeting of him for bad tackles during games and the lack of action from the officials.
You were the recipient of a few tasty tackles, shall we say, this afternoon. Just talk to us about that.
I don't even know what to say anymore. I feel like before anyone gets a red card, I'd have to get my leg broken or something, which is why I lose my head, because it's like some of the yellow cards, like against Watford, the guy stood on the back of my calf and still a yellow card. And it's like, why am I getting different treatment to other players? So yeah, I just don't understand it. And it's every week, every referee.
It was Etienne Capoue who did that for Watford, and it was terrible.
Yeah, and there was a shocking tackle on him during the Huddersfield game, which
Matthias Jorgensen
did
an awful one.
Garner a red. And now Zaha scored a wonderful goal, and I understand that top players have defenders who want to be robust with them to kind of put them off their game. But if you listen to his voice, I don't think this is a guy who courts the limelight. I've never heard him speak before, by the way. Had you heard him before?
No.
I had.
No,
the first time.
He sounds exasperated
if
and
you
just like defeated.
There's a crack and a break in his voice a couple of times where he really feels like he's been put upon. And this isn't a pampered Premier League footballer upset with a little bit of the industrial stuff. I'm not red carding him. I'm red carding something. I'm not sure what it is, though.
Okay.
I need help from Palace fans and people who have watched them more than I have this season and last season. Is this definitely something that you see? Try and be objective, try and be whatever, but is this...
Well, the stat here, I do have a few stats for you that kind of back it up. He was one of the five most fouled players in the league last year, and that was with all the time that he missed in addition to that. So he's fouled quite frequently. This year, he's been fouled the fifth most times, and again, that's with him missing a game this season. Since 2013, only one player has been fouled more than Wilfried Zaha. You want to guess?
Ooh, Eden Hazard.
Yeah, very good. So there is some truth to it.
So the dribblers get fouled more.
Well, exactly. But for him, see, the thing with Eden Hazard is he's smaller, so it probably doesn't take a big crunching tackle to foul him. Wilfried Zaha is really fast. He's great with the ball at his feet, and he's also kind of a big guy in addition to that. So there might be some other big defensive midfielders like Etienne Capoue or center halves who feel that if I'm going to take this guy down, it's got to be a hard crunching tackle. So I don't know. Maybe there is some truth to it.
And maybe refs look at him and his size and say, and don't they see it more as 50-50 rather than, do you know what I'm getting at?
Maybe. But like when a guy's standing on the back of your calf, like, come on, I can understand some of the frustration. And then this past weekend, he gets yellow carded.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, because he followed up an attack.
He was frustrated. He was clearly frustrated.
You can really tell.
Yeah. Let's see. My red card, I kind of referenced this a moment ago when we were talking about Juve. Douglas Costa of Juventus, he spit in Federico Di Francesco's face on Sunday. The incident was clearly caught on camera, and now Max Allegri says the club will be fining him. He's going to be suspended, of course, as well. And what really should have been a nice win for Juve,
yeah.
Ronaldo gets his first two goals. Now it's become a damaging win for them because they're going to lose this guy. Costa did apologize on Instagram after the match, but he really didn't have a choice. The whole world saw what he did. There's two things in sports that I just don't really understand, and you kind of see them more in this sport than any other. Biting is one of them. I've never, in all the years I've played sports, I've never had the urge to bite anyone. And spitting. Never, in all my moments of frustration, you know, I've wanted to maybe hit people.
Yeah. I remember that game where you...
Basketball, yeah. I had had it with this kid.
Oh, that was crazy. I never seen you so angry recounting a tale.
But I've never felt the urge to spit on somebody, or in this case, I mean, Costa spit in his face.
I've punched someone on the field. I've punched someone. Spitting I've never done.
No.
I've been spat at. I told you about that.
I know. I remember that.
Right down the face.
I don't know what I would do.
I was in a game in this city.
Yeah. I'd lose my mind if somebody did that to me.
Definitely. No, he definitely, Di Francesco definitely gave him plenty of robust attention in that game.
Yeah. But I couldn't believe the way Di Francesco handled himself after he had been spat upon. Like, my human gut reaction would be to now murder this guy who just did that to me. But Di Francesco right away was just like, oh, look what he did. Like, he was complaining to the ref about it rather than going at...
There are some footballing cultures in which it's much more common.
Well, I would say that this one here in the U.S. is not one of those.
No.
Yeah.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
What you got?
Maurizio Pochettino. I, as this podcast has borne out in my Our Cows at the Bridge episode, love a good bovine metaphor. I saw this on Twitter today from Pochettino's Champions League presser, Dan Kilpatrick. Poch has just had his Cantona seagulls moment. Experience is like a cow who sees a train every day for 10 years crossing in front of her. And if you ask the cow when the train is coming, she's not going to answer. And if you're wondering what Dan is referring to vis-a-vis Cantona, Cantona came out with some kind of extraordinary metaphor comment after he was banned for 8 months in 1995 when he leapt into the stand at Selhurst Park to kick a Crystal Palace fan who was berating him after he was sent off. This was his only comment at the press conference after he received his ban.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Don't you love in the beginning of that when people are so caught off guard by what he said, you can hear journalists murmuring, seagulls? Listen.
When the seagulls follow the trawler.
Some guy goes, what is that?
When seagulls? The seagulls?
That's bizarre, man.
I will never forget that. And Patch's cow comment, I mean, it's wildly entertaining. I'm not exactly sure what it means.
I don't either.
But I love both. I describe Chelsea as cows. Remember what I said? When the rain comes, the cow goes and sits down.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not smart enough really to understand any of this.
Footballing minds like myself and Cantona.
I have
and
a pea brain. A very small pea brain. Well, my pea brain, actually, by pure coincidence, my man of the match was Wilfried Zaha. I had no idea you were going to say any of that about him in your red card. I'll be honest, this is just purely self-indulgent because I love the guy. He's become maybe my favorite player to watch in this league. That's it. I'm a fan. Simple as that. The goal that he scored over the weekend, it was kind of just a perfect microcosm of what he means to that club. Great individual effort, fending off defenders, still had the stamina at the end of the run and the ability to fire the perfect shot past the keeper. Here's what it sounded like.
Zaha. Townsend ahead of it. Joined now by Kouyaté. Zaha. Oh, that's sensational from Wilfried Zaha. What a wonderful goal. All his own work. And Huddersfield, despite all their first half possession, have been undone by a moment of pure brilliance from Wilfried Zaha. Simply sensational.
It truly was. One of my favorite stats out there right now is the one where since the start of last season, in the 10 games Zaha has missed, Palace have secured a total of 0 points. He means everything to them, simply put.
What's the phrase? Talismanic?
You could say that, for sure. And, you know, I was also going to actually talk about, it's why I had the stats ready, what you talked about, what he said to the reporter about how he feels like referees are just not giving him the benefit of the doubt, that he almost feels targeted in some ways. I like a guy who, yes, he has shown frustration and he's picked up yellow cards. But like the best way, like he's taken that and used it to have this sensational start to the season. Like he's clearly at times playing angry. You can see it on him. But look what he did in this game against Huddersfield, the goal that he scored, angry. He's got 3 goals through 4 games so far this year. He did miss 1 game through injury. But the more I watch him, I've just grown to love this guy as a player.
I think he's fantastic, and I don't think he's courting controversy or courting kind of look, woe is me.
Well,
I just genuinely feel this guy feels he's put upon.
I don't know that he's courting it, but I do think that he now...
Oh, he's sending a message to the referees.
He wants that out there.
Well, he wants to be protected, and I think that's fair. This wouldn't be the first time a player's done this, but he's obviously got to the point. Like, I didn't hear him moan about it last season, certainly not on Match of the Day. Millions watch Match of the Day. That was seen, and it was seen by the Referees Association.
Yep, absolutely. So there you go. That is the show.
Monster Pod.
We'll be back later this week after the Champions League Thursday.
Yes.
We'll be back.
Not Wednesday, because we're both observing the Day of Atonement.
That's right.
Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur.
What are you atoning for?
So many things.
That shirt?
So many. It's one of your worst opinions. It's one, honestly, I'll never quite understand why, especially while you're wearing whatever that is on your body right now. This was fun, despite the fact that I hand you the Caught Offside Cup, and as I hand it to you, you mock what I'm wearing. But nevertheless, as always, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See you later, my friend.
Take care, my friend.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.